Man, it's feel like we've been so long.
It's been so long.
It's been so long.
Since we've talked to our friends.
It's been so long.
It's been so long since we have talked to our friends.
I like the little intro music. I think we're going to do that from now on.
It's been so long since we've talked to our friends. And now we say hello.
Oh, man. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Christ. We've been gone, like what we've been singing about and been talking about. But we're back. It's been... I'm not even going to try to estimate how long it's been, but, you know, it's been busy in the old Dylan Jackson world.
It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, you know, and it's been mostly me. I've had some tests come up where I needed to study for them. And
tell them what you did. Tell them what you did.
I passed I have an electrical license. I can now do electrical work, so... And that took some studying and at all times that I had available. So, and that just, it fell in the Wednesday afternoon slot of when we usually do these podcast episodes. So, but that's done. I've passed that test. And then just on, you know, kind of like compounded on that was just work's busy right now. You know, sometimes I got to stay late. Sometimes Dylan's got to stay late. And so it's just been... been one of those weeks, one of those months, I would say.
It's been going on for a while.
Yeah, I'd say a month since we've been back in the studio. So, you know, it's good to be back though. I'm glad that we've had a little sabbatical. That's all right. Because to be honest, this next word that we're doing, it took me some time to really. To really study it, and be honest, I'm still not there, like fully as an opinion on it or like my stance on the word. You know, ask me again in maybe a couple of months when I think about it more, or ask me again in, you know, a couple of years, and I might have a better understanding of it and might be able to better describe it. But that being said, we are going to be talking about the word soul. And it is quite the category breaking word for me. So it was, and then, you know, I'll leave it at that. I'm going to leave a lot of open-ended questions today because I have not answered them myself. And I'll just get you thinking about them, you know. Dylan, feel free to talk as much as you want on these open-ended questions too, just to, and for you listeners, the same, as in, if you may be thinking of a way around it that I haven't, then, you know, shoot us an email that no one ever has. You could be the first at info.coffeeandchrist.com. Actually, I need to recheck that because info.coffeeandchrist@gmail.com. Okay, there we go. There it is. And so here we go. The word soul. So, you know, like I kind of started with, this has been a really like paradigm cracking word for me. You know, it's kind of been not really challenging, but, you know, I think it'd be great to go ahead and just start off by talking about, from my growing up, and understanding, what does the word soul mean? You know, for me, I always thought, and Dylan, feel free to weigh in whenever, but for me, I always thought, the soul was this disembodied self that exists past my physical body, and my physical body is going to be left here, and my soul is going to go off to wherever. You know, that's what I've always thought. I don't really remember how I got to that. I think it was just something that was always
It's kind of what we were all taught.
Yeah,
really.
I feel like it was always a kind of just like a base standard that like this world is broken and God's going to come back and he's going to redeem it, and then our dead physical self is going to be left behind and he's going to take our souls up somewhere else, you know. That's what I've always been taught. However, so in the Hebrew, the word is nefesh. In the Old Testament, the word soul, our word soul, is used 72 times. And now that word soul, our word, is different than the Hebrew word nefesh. Nefesh is, in the Old Testament alone, used 754 times. It is one of the most common words in the entire Hebrew Bible. Like, it's next to, like, literally, like, God, whether that is talking about, you know, the God of the Bible, you know, L-O-R-D, capital, all around, or just God in general, that'd be Elohim, just talking about generic gods, and then, like place, and swam, and sacrifice. Like, all those words are, like, in the 700 categories. So, nevertheless, this Hebrew word nefesh is used a ton. And, you know, there's a real range of meaning, you know. And we have words like this in English as well, you know, different nuances of words that we use in one sentence that mean something, and then we use that same word in another, and it can kind of mean something else. So we have those different things, but for this word in particular, nefesh, which is what usually our English word soul is translated to, the most common translation of this word is life. Second is soul. Third is me. Fourth is living. Fifth is I. Sixth is heart, which is interesting because we just got done talking about heart not too long ago. And so now nefesh is used to, in some translations, as heart. And then seventh is themselves. Eight is you. Nine is people. 10 is anyone. And then there's about 50 other English words that are used to translate this word in really like niche specific contexts. So the point is, this is a very broad word. It is very plastic. It has a very range, a wide range, different meanings. And so, you know, what translators do, and you know, what we are, I guess, essentially doing here is we want to examine like this broad usage of all of these different usages of the word nefesh in its context, what it's saying, and then get kind of like the core ideas underneath and see how all these work in their contexts. And so like kind of an English word to help kind of relate to this Hebrew word nefesh is, I would think life. You know, there might be others, but life just came to mind because it could be like, you know, get a life. That'd be like referring to your social, you know, structure, your, you know, like life also as an organic, you know, biological thing, or life as in just like my personal life or my life out of work. So it's like there's lots of different nuances to this word. And that's kind of like the same with nefesh. So let's look at some Bible verses that raise the question that this word isn't just a disembodied part of me. Because if, you know, you just look at all the words that we just said as these range meanings of translating, only one time is soul mentioned. Everything else is very physical words. And so Psalm 42 is the first one that I was going to look at. And this is one that's kind of on the gap, you know. It's kind of like, it can be taken either way, either the way I've been thinking my whole life, whether it be some, you know, disembodied part of me, or could be physical. So it begins Psalm 42 verse 1, as a deer pants for the flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul, that is, my nefesh, thirst for the living God. So when shall I come and appear before God? So you know, as the deer pants for flowing streams, my nephesh pants for God. You know, my nephesh thirst for God. So, you know, so panting deer is, you know, likened to the my nephesh, my soul, used here in the ESV, panting for God. You know, the deer is thirsty, my nephesh thirst. So God is depicted as like the source of life that can refresh in a way, the same way that water can refresh a deer. You know, and this, you know, can go either way. You know, deer panting for water is a very physical look, and it's using it as comparison of our soul, you know, and this could be more disembodied, you know, soul thirsting for God. But to me, after I've kind of studied more, and it does the same with Psalms 23, is the same way, that it almost can go either way. And so basically, you can see, we'll keep going on a lot of these, that translating is hard work. Like, these people are doing the best they can to help render this in English, because it's going from Hebrew to Greek. And then when they're writing in Greek, they're thinking in Hebrew, and then you get it. It's just, it's hard work. It's hard work to get what we have right now. And so many scholars actually have narrowed down the meaning to the most basic form being throat. So they've chalked it up that nephesh at its most basic form means throat. And if you think of our past examples, the word glory, how at the most basic meaning, it meant heavy, like a weighty matter. And so, you know, what the translators are doing here, they're looking for different nuances of meaning that can really be used to explain the other words, almost like a springboard, something to link them all kind of together. And therefore, nephesh is what they think, the word throat. And if you think about it, you know, throat is where your food is, you know, or where you take in food, you drink, it enters your body. You know, if you were to, you know, a common way, or I guess it's not a common way, I guess medieval times, you know, people had their heads chopped off, you know, so they would slice at their neck, their nephesh. It supports your head, you know, it's where your brain is, it kind of connects you to the rest of your body. Your neck's pretty important. Some more examples of this where it might seem a little more tangible. In Numbers chapter 11, this is one of the complaints that the Israelites are making to Moses and to God. And it says in Numbers 11, verse 4 through 6, it says, "Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our nephesh is dried up, and there's nothing at all but this manna to look at.'" So the ESV translates that as strength. So their nephesh is a metaphor of them being hungry, thirsty for something. And as you can see, you know, we're not talking about a disembodied thing here. You know, this is a physical hunger and thirst. And when you get thirsty, you know, you feel it in your throat. You feel a little tickle in your throat. So another example of this is Psalm 69. Interesting psalm is, depending on what translation you read, is what you'll get out of this psalm. Some of the translations kind of paraphrase here. The NASB, it says, "Save me, O God, for the waters have come up," or have threatened, excuse me, "my nephesh." And then it translates nephesh to life. In ESV, it says, "For the waters have come up to my nephesh." But actually, ESV takes the step and says, "my neck." They fully say, "my neck." And the NASB is paraphrasing out that original metaphor. So, you know, if nephesh just meant this life, and it was a metaphor for your soul, then what does that mean if the waters have come up to your disembodied form? You know, you see how, you know, if you just read the Bible with the translation you have, there's nothing wrong with that at all. You're gonna have everything you need and everything that you would love to know. However, once you dive a little deeper, there's some things that aren't really clear to what you've learned in church, I would say. And this has been a big word. You know, because right now in the ESV, it says my neck, but the Hebrew word there is nephesh, and that's the Hebrew word we get for soul. So, and this is not a disembodied form. This is very physical part of us. Again, a step further, Psalm 105. It's talking about Joseph here, and it's kind of, and you can read the whole psalm, but it says in verse 17 and 18, it says, his feet, talking about Joseph, who was sold as a slave, were hurt with fetters, and his neck was put into a collar of irons. And the Hebrew word there, as you can guess, is nephesh. His neck was literally put into something. And so as we keep going, there's another step where, and it's a real like geeky word for some reason. I haven't used it a lot, but it's the word synecdoche.
I never heard of that word.
Synecdoche is a, well, you have, you just didn't know it was synecdoche. Synecdoche is a literal, like it's used in literature, a reference to refer to a part as a whole. So like, you know, like, did you get a head count?
Mm.
It's not meaning just like count your head. You're counting your entire person, you know, or like when you get new, or when you get a car, you know, like an old, like dad joke would be like, you know, let me see your wheels or something like that. He's not just wanting to look at your car wheels. Like he's referring to the whole vehicle, you know, and that's what synecdoche is. It's something to describe your whole person. And so nephesh here is not only describing your neck, but it's a way of describing who you fully are. You know, a common phrase for killing someone in the Bible is they seek my nephesh. English translates that to life. You know, they seek my life. To murder someone is to strike their nephesh. When Joseph's brothers were plotting to get rid of him, you know, because of his whole dream about how they're going to bow down to him and how he's loved most by their father. And Reuben actually tells the rest of the brothers, he says, don't kill them because we don't want to strike his nephesh. And instead, you know, they throw him in a pit. So is Reuben saying don't strike the non-physical part of him? I don't think so. Again, Leviticus 21, talking about ritual purity and how to be holy when you're offering these sacrifices in the temple. It, most of the time in English, it's called a corpse, but there is a time where it is called a dead nephesh. Again, that's like, they're not talking about a dead soul, something that's disembodied from them, because we can't, at least now my understanding is different, but like back, you know, a few weeks ago before I started studying this was, you know, you can't touch your soul, you know, you can't like reach out, grab somebody's soul, you know, so it's talking physical. And here's the one that like got me good, that, cause I felt like the whole time that like, this is just a big misunderstanding, you know, like I'm so steeped in the soul is something that goes on, without me one day, without my physical self, but it's in Genesis chapter 1. All the way at the beginning in Genesis 1, verse 20 through 24, God's creating this magnificent world. And oh my goodness, I'm still in the preface. The preface. It says in verse 20, and God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living nepheshes, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great nephesh, and every living nephesh that moves, and with the water swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful, multiply, fill the waters and the seas, let the birds multiply in the earth. And then there was evening, and there was morning on the fifth day. 24. And God said, let the earth bring forth living nepheshes, according to their kind. Now, if you read this in our modern English versions, it is, let the waters swarm with living creatures. It's talking about, you know, animals. It's talking about, you know, the fishes and the sharks and the whales and the squids. And then in chapter 20 or verse 24, let the earth bring forth living nepheshes, living creatures. Again, and this one's talking about the squirrels, the deer, the antelope, you know? Like, so what this is saying from a, you know, Old Testament standpoint so far is that if I applied my knowledge of or my past knowledge of the word soul, then animals have souls. But I haven't, you know, that's completely like contradictory to like what it is. Because to me, you know, soul for so long, soul is what made me special. You know, it would set us apart from the animals. But right here, Genesis 1, 20 and 24, animals also have souls if I apply the same knowledge. So does our English word soul really help us? Is it really diving into what it is? Because it does in chapter 2, verse 7 of Genesis, when God formed man, he breathed in the breath of life, and the man became a living nephesh, a living creature. So we also have nepheshes in us. So I guess my standpoint of where I've came is that we don't have a nephesh. We don't have a soul, but we are a soul. And I don't know what that looks like for the rest of my studies. I'll just be honest with you. Because if so long I've thought that soul is this part of me that goes on without, you know, without my physical self, but according to the biblical writers, it's not a separate thing. Like our bodies are like one. They are fully intact. We can't have our soul without our body. It's just something that I guess I've come to the conclusion it doesn't make sense. Because, I mean, if that's the case, then animals have souls. And animals are going to be in heaven. Everyone that I've killed. And I just don't. It doesn't line up to what the biblical authors are saying. Because we might all have nepheshes. In this part, it doesn't mean our souls. It's meaning our entire self. And if that be the case, you know, the only thing that makes us special, humans is special, is because we've been given an opportunity to be image bearers of God. That's why we're created in that way. But we still have a nephesh.
So, wouldn't it make everybody special? Because technically everybody has that opportunity.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is if this is the case, then also animals have soul. But what I'm just saying is what makes us special is not our soul. What makes us special is we're creating in the image of God. Because in this case, animals have souls. In fact, if you read Proverbs 12:10, one of the criteria of righteousness is how you treat your animals. And it talks about how the righteous knows the nephesh of their animal. Like, is that talking about the animal's soul? I don't think so. So in the Old Testament, you know, this idea of souls trapped in bodies, it's almost non-existent. And I almost say not almost because I, like I said, I am still very, like, scratching the surface of me, like, coming to grasp on this, you know. But I would say that the biblical authors think of it quite the opposite, where nephesh refers to, like, the whole part of yourself. And now, like, New Testament even supports some of this. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus on Sermon on the Mount. Now, this is in Greek. Now, the people who are, you know, this is in Greek, they're still speaking in Hebrew, but they're writing in Greek. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, Jesus is telling, he's giving the Sermon on the Mount. And he says, therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your suke. Suke is the Greek translation of the Hebrew word nephesh. So if we've just, you know, had this kind of establishment that in the Old Testament, nephesh is not the disembodied soul. It's more of a way of referring to your entire self. It's a way of referring to your neck, your what you put in your body, what keeps you going, what, you know, God breathes his life into us, you know, and if it's referring to our entire self, then we get this from Jesus, where he says, do not be anxious about your psuche, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more important than food and body more important than clothing? Now, I'm actually going to have to look at that last part where he talks about isn't life more important than food, just to see if he uses suke again. What you eat and what you eat or what you will drink, nor your body, what you will put it, is not life, suke again, more than food and body more than clothing. So in this case, suke has been translated to life, not soul. And right here, he's talking about what you eat or drink. That's clearly physical stuff. And then you have other instances like Matthew 10:28. And again, I actually have not spent a crazy amount of time in the New Testament on this matter. But in this situation, ESV, he does reference, uses our English word soul. And he says in verse 29, and do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. See, here's a good example of it can be this, you know, metaphysical part of us, because it uses the distinction of body and soul. You know, rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in Gehenna, in hell. Again, I don't have any explanation, I'll be honest, because I still don't have like a real grasp on this word yet. And I'm sorry if you've come to the podcast for all these answers, because I just don't have them. I don't have them. This is, you know, this raises so many questions about, like, what's life going to be like after death? You know, what's the resurrection going to be like? What is our soul going on, or is it our whole self going on? You know, and I know lots of people who are way more versed in this concept, and I'm sure I could go talk to them out in my own congregation, and they could really sway me in any direction about what the authors are saying, what its meaning as what life is going to be like after death. But I heard a scholar once put it, and he said that it's not life after death, it's life after life. And I was like, huh. So is it, okay. I was like, okay, so what does that mean? And again, no answer. That's something I'm just going to have to kind of chew on like a piece of bark. Just wonder what's going on. You know, another reference in Luke chapter 17, verse 33, it says, whoever seeks to keep his suke will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. Like what? Like that can go either way, you know? Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it. So whoever seeks to preserve his suke will lose it, but whoever loses his life will keep it. And in Greek, it doesn't translate his life on the back end. It actually just says, and whoever loses will preserve it. So our English translators have added it in there. But there's another example right there, talking about whoever will seek to keep his... Is he talking about this disembodied person of us? I think right here it's physical. You know, whoever seeks to keep his life here, he's going to lose it. But whoever loses their physical lives for Jesus' sake will preserve it. Man, you know, we can do this all night. There's so many references like this where it can go back and forth. And I do want to, and this is how I would like to close it, because there is a point in my studies that stuff like this might just be best kept to yourself after this conversation. And I'm sorry if I've done that. If I haven't done that, actually. Because at the end of the day, this distinction, in my opinion, and this is why I've come to terms with my opinions on this, that I'm still like not fully on, is that none of this really has a lasting meaning. Who really cares what the Hebrew authors, if they're talking about this disembodied version of us, or if they're talking about this physical version of us and what new creation is going to look like, what resurrection is. Guys, I'm going to be honest. I don't really care about what it's going to look like. I know that Jesus is going to be there. I know that all the pain is going to be taken away. Justice will be brought. Love will be spread. Every wrong made right. And if that is me physically or me not physically, I'm excited for it. And so that's where I would like to end this, my portion of it is a toss-up. There is two different meanings that can be seen throughout the Bible of our word soul, of the nephesh, of psuche. But at the end of the day, I just don't care. And
that's a good way to put it.
So, yeah, that's the. I'm sorry, I've taken you on this. I almost feel like I should just, like, we should scrap this and I should just not talk about it. But I will. That's it. I just don't care. I know that one day I'm going to be with Jesus, and that's all that matters.
We are going to continue it next week because I want to share my thoughts. And yes. We're out of time.
Thank goodness.
But anyway, we're going to start part two.
Good deal.
Next Wednesday. Pick it back up.
Yeah. I'm glad. I'm hoping I can just sit and listen for a while because at the end of the day, like I said, I kind of just confuse myself. And maybe it's just because I don't have eyes to see it. Maybe somebody's like, oh, I see it. But me, I'm just not there yet. So yeah, my stamp. This is my stamp on it. I don't care.
Well,
so
we'll end it on that, and we'll catch you next week.
Yep. We love you. Jesus love you.
Bye-bye.